Yeah, we were trying to figure out where to watch it, and we don't have Netflix. That's like the one streaming service we don't have because we just never used it. So we don't have it, so I rented it on Amazon, and it was like $3.79 to rent it or like $4.99 to buy it. And my husband turned to me and said, "Well, do you just want to buy it?" And I said, "I'm never going to watch this again." I'm only watching it because of the podcast today.
So, I actually do own this movie, and had you asked me, I could have just sent you my Fandango information and you could have just
It's
logged into that.
fine.
That way you wouldn't have to buy it or rent it or
I
anything.
know, Damien Chazelle getting more of my money. It's fine.
Yeah, well. Hello and welcome to It's the Greatest Show, Man, the podcast where we talk about the musicals you love and why they're great and why they suck. I am your host, Brantley Wheeler, and with me as always is my co-host, Emily Chavone.
Hi.
Yeah, I know that you're listening, you can't see this, but your hoodie is so tight around your face right now.
It's not though. It's just that
It's the
I've got
headphones.
my big studio headphones on and so it barely fits over them. But wait, I can make it better.
That is better.
And my favorite is that the shape of this hood is pointy.
It's
So it
honestly.
just looks so stupid, but I'm cozy. It's like it's got that nice like Sherpa fleece lining on the
Oh,
inside.
yeah.
Now I can't get out.
Anyway.
And I have a blanket with my dog's face on it.
Honestly, though, adorable. It's very
On
cute.
my lap.
It's very cute.
I considered putting fleece pants over my leggings. I'm wearing fluffy socks and slippers.
Well, if you didn't live in a cave.
Not in it, just near it. But this is, it's been so cold for December. We haven't had a cold December in a long time.
I know.
Usually it doesn't really get cold here until January, February.
Yeah, that's true.
And like my Facebook memories keep popping up and it'll say things like, it'll have a picture of Riley playing outside. And it'll say, when it's December, but it's still 70 degrees outside. Or like a screenshot of the weather app. And it's like, December 10th, 70 degrees, sunny. Like, where's that?
Hey, when I got home this evening, I brought my youngest son in, and then I went and took my dog out briefly, and I was like, "Ooh, dog, you better hurry up! It is cold AF out here."
It's
It was like it was
cold.
like 20 degrees or less outside, and I was like, "Nope,
And
you better hurry up."
it actually hasn't been that cold this week until now. I mean, we're
Yeah.
going to drop down into the teens tonight, which is pretty cold for where we are.
Yeah, my weather
But it's
app was
been
saying
so like
13.
damp and windy that it just feels terrible.
Ugh, Damp and Windy's a terrible band name.
It's a brass band for
Speaking of
sure.
brass bands,
Speaking of brass bands, we watched a movie this time.
we did watch a movie this time. I want to say, well,
This time.
this
We
time.
watched three movies.
Recently.
Okay, anyway.
Okay. Anyway, so if you read the episode title, today we're talking about the, I want to say, hit movie musical La La Land. And boy, do I have thoughts.
I'm just gonna yawn unashamedly through this entire episode because it's late, but also because that's how I feel about this movie.
Yeah. Woof. Well, do we what do we want to do? We want to talk about
Well,
history, like production history? Do we want to
the
talk
just
about
what, well, there's not a
synopsis? Like
production
what?
history because it's just a film, but
Well, there's a little bit of it.
sure, go ahead. Take it away.
Okay. So, La La Land is a 2016 American musical romantic comedy film written and directed by Damien Chazelle. It stars Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone as the two main leads in the cast. It was released in theaters globally December 9th, 2016, with songs and lyrics by Benj Pasek and Justin Paul. And the dance choreography was done by Mandy Moore, who is If you watch Dancing with the Stars, is very well known for that. She does a lot of the choreography for Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, but not that Mandy Moore.
No, not the actor Mandy Moore. It's a different
Mandy Moore.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. She does the choreography on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, no, I just thought that was worth saying. Not that Mandy Moore.
Yeah, not the actor Mandy Moore, the choreographer Mandy Moore. It first premiered at the 73rd Venice International Film Festival in August of 2016, and then was released globally after that. It was considered a major commercial success. The movie itself cost around a budget of $30 million, and it grossed $472 worldwide. So pretty successful as far as movies are concerned, and received widespread critical acclaim, particularly for direction and screenplay and the performances of Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. It was very successful critically. And I have to question a lot of things about people who work in the film industry about whether they know how musicals should actually function and work. Because, man, today was the second time I've watched this film, and probably the last.
So, yeah, I'm with you. I saw it once, close to when it came out, and I saw it again today, and... yeah, that's 4 hours of my life I'm never going to get back.
So to kind of delve in more to, for me, the head-scratching success of this particular film, it actually has won a fairly large number of awards and was nominated for a ton. It actually is the record holder for winning the most awards at the 74th Golden Globes. And at the Academy Film Awards, won 5, including Best Film. At the Academy Awards, it won 6 categories, like the Oscars. It won 6 categories, including Best Director for Damien Chazelle, Best Actress for Emma Stone. But it lost Best Picture, very famously lost Best Picture, to the film Moonlight. Look that up.
At least something good came out of this.
That's true. That was very funny.
Do we remember this? If you're a Gen Z kid, are you old enough to remember this moment?
Yeah. At the Oscars, it was like this. Like, it was funny because from what I can remember, La La Land was expected to sweep the Oscars, and it didn't. But it was nominated for Best Picture alongside a different film called Moonlight, and they misread the card or got the wrong card or something.
They mixed up the cases. It was right after they had gone. I remember seeing a whole thing about how they keep all of the cards under lock and key, and there is a case on each side of the stage that has the envelope in it. And for whatever reason, I think it was Emma Stone was the one who had been announced right before that. So the case went on for her, but then the one from the other side of the stage was not taken off. It was brought on. And so that's where if you watch the clip back, you can see them stutter a little bit because they're confused because it says Emma Stone on the card. And so they announced La La Land because that was the movie. And then they had to be like, no, La La Land didn't win Best Picture. Emma Stone won Best Actress.
Wow.
And so it was just a case mix-up, but it was right after they had gone. I can't remember if we watched it live. We may have watched it live. But I remember seeing something like the day before that was explaining how they keep track of all the stuff and how they make sure it stays secret and no one finds out and that everyone gets the right envelope and blah, blah, blah. And then they messed up.
Yeah.
That was fun.
It was very fun. But yes, that was a very funny moment, but something that actually happened because of that is that La La Land is actually the most nominated film to ever not win Best Picture, which is, to me, is kind of funny. The Damien Chazelle was 32 at the time he won his Oscar for this film, and he is now known as the youngest director to ever win Oscar for Best Director, and for some reason is regarded as one of the best films of the 2010s. As well as one of the best musical and romantic films of all time, which I do not understand, having seen this movie twice. But apparently that's true.
Yeah, it's something that comes up a lot with my students, too.
I know, I remember I remember when this came out, there were so many people talking about how good it was and how much they loved it. And also, like, let me backtrack a little bit. There are two films I remember people talking about the most when I was in college. One was Frozen. The other one was this.
Oh, yeah, you were still doing college when this movie came out. Luckily, I was not.
I was doing college when this movie came out. And man, it was something else.
Wait, when did you graduate?
2016.
Oh, so you were out by then.
No, did I? Yeah, I was out, but a lot of my friends were talking about how good this
Okay,
movie was.
fair.
And I was like, oh, okay. And I didn't see it in theaters. I didn't see it at the time. I was like, oh, okay. But I knew it was a musical. It was very well regarded. So I just bought a copy of it and I took it home and I watched it and I was like, this is it. This is what you're so into right now. And like, I still don't get it, but hey, let's talk about this.
I heard you have a summary.
I do have a summary. I have a quick little summary here. I try to make my summaries at least a little bit funny, but I was like, you know what? This doesn't deserve that. So I just wrote something pretty brief here. So here is La La Land. Mia, played by Emma Stone, and Sebastian, Ryan Gosling, are two young creatives living in the city of Los Angeles. Mia has aspirations of becoming an actress, and Sebastian wants to open his own jazz club one day where they play nothing but pure jazz because jazz is dying, according to him. They have a little meet cute on the freeway after an incredibly uninspired opening number, and then randomly butt into each other into various places until deciding to date and follow their dreams. But spoilers, jealousy erupts and they end up going their separate ways, even though they still deeply love each other, maybe. They both find success apart until one fateful evening when they see each other one last time across the club, simply smiling from across the room at one another, and then it's over. The end.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the entire movie. That's pretty succinct. So, I have two questions for you about this movie. Number one, do you like jazz music?
Jazz is life. No, so okay. When people talk about jazz, people who are like, "Do you like jazz?" and like talking about jazz in an artful way, no, that's not the jazz that I like. I like big band swing,
Sure.
but like I like Rat Pack 50s, like that, like big full orchestra big band kind of stuff, but not the jazz that he's talking about in this movie.
Yeah, that's fair.
Not really my scene.
Yeah. And it's just something that just keeps coming up this entire thing because he's so obsessed with this idea. Talking about how at one point he's like, I could never date a woman who said they hated jazz music. Well, he ends up doing it anyway
And
because
then 2 minutes later, they're
2 minutes
dating.
down they're dating. Yeah. But the thing about it is like I find people like him to be incredibly obnoxious people. They're just so just full of themselves and literally as I was watching this movie, the comment that I made was as far as movies about jazz go, I think Soul is a better movie. I'm sure you haven't seen that because you're not a Disney adult. But the Pixar movie or Disney movie Soul is very heavily steeped in jazz music also, but I think that movie's better. Also, why are all jazz players assholes? Because it sure seems like it. Like everyone who's like a hardcore like jazz musician is just an asshole. Is that
I
true?
mean, I
Musician?
think brass players in general are assholes. Sorry, brass players. And
Well, he's a piano
some
player.
sax players. Well, and I've met my fair share. Maybe it's just musicians in general. Sometimes, honestly, as a musician, sometimes it's just fun to be an asshole to someone who's not a musician.
Is it?
Like, we used to make a joke when I was in school that you were either a musician or you were a vocalist. Because if you were a singer, that's not a musician. You don't get it. You're just moving your mouth and you're faking it. So, yeah,
Which
I've.
is a very funny thing for you to bring up because we recently had a professional musician come to our school and speak to our students, and they asked him, "What's your favorite instrument?" And he said,
It's my
"It's my
voice.
voice."
Yeah, no, I. Yeah,
Boo.
but the. I mean, okay, so I went to. When I went to college, I was one of very few people in the theater program who had any music background, and even like of the musical theater people who had any amount of like music theory or training on any instrument besides singing. And there were a lot of people in the program who I could not stand who were like, well, I'm a soprano. I can't sing anything other than soprano. That's too low for me. Like we did, when we did Mother Courage and I music directed, I remember a bunch of people giving me a hard time because I gave the altos the melody when I arranged mm-hmm. things. And so sopranos had to learn a harmony. And they were, I just kept being like, I need more altos. I don't need as many sopranos. Like, I want this to feel like, it needs, everything needs to feel like lower. And everyone gave me such a hard time about everything. It's too low. It's too hard. Like, and there was no effort made from some people to learn how to read music. Or even like have a basic understanding of which notes are where and how to plunk it on the piano to teach it to yourself. Like, if you were a musical theater major at my school, you were expected to take remedial music theory because they didn't expect you to know that this is a quarter note. A quarter note gets one beat in 4/4, I know. But, right,
I know that.
Like,
I'm not a musician and I know.
And
that.
I had to fight to test out of remedial music theory because they were like, there's no way you're going to be able to do it. And I did. And I got one question wrong. They gave me the remedial theory final. I got one question wrong, and it's because I couldn't remember the term Phrygian. And they were like, what is the mode based on the third of a scale? Like, I was like, I wrote median because I can't remember the word, but I know that's wrong. And then the head of the music department was like, oh, I guess you don't have to take remedial theory. And I was like, thank you. And then I didn't learn anything in the theory class I did have to take because I'd already taken music theory. So I just, as a like performing arts person, I get frustrated at the people who don't think they need to learn some of this stuff or have no interest in learning because they expect everyone else to just like plunk out the notes and teach them. And so, yeah, I do remember there have been times. Do I regret them? No, probably not. But there have been times where I was an asshole to people who didn't understand music because it was just, like, if you didn't care enough to learn about it, like, if someone had approached me and said, hey, can you help me with my theory homework? Absolutely. I would love to help you. Mm-hmm. Let me explain to you how this works and why it works. And I talk to the kids about stuff now, and I'm not even a music teacher now. Mm-hmm. But the people who are like, well, I'm a singer. I don't need to know that. Well, f*** you. You should know it. Learn it. You deserve to have nothing good ever happen to you.
Well, you and I have had a similar conversation just talking about me because I can't really read music. I don't know, but I know what the different notes are. I don't know what they, like, where they are on the scale as far as like A, B, C, D, E. I don't know any of that. Or I do, but like very minimally do I know that. And I couldn't tell you what it sounds like, but I understand rhythm. I know how to read rhythm. I can do that. But as far as like, I'm very aware that I probably should know those things, especially because I do musical theater sometimes. I just have not taken the time to do that, but I'm sure I could find an online music theory or something kind of course like that to teach myself. But like, it's not going to compare to anything that you know, and I know that.
But like, I mean, and it's... So to answer your question, yes, jazz musicians are assholes, but all of us are assholes. To some extent. That was a long tangent.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm not going to say enough. Anything new or riveting here. Yes.
Okay. All right. Second question. Why is this movie so boring?
Okay, so I remember the first time I watched this, like, my husband was like, you'll like this. It's a musical. We'll watch it. And I had heard about it, and I was like, I think I'm going to hate it. And I remember the opening number being very musical theater and then the rest kind of being slop. And So rewatching it today, I actually wasn't as angry at it this time around as I was the first time. And maybe because I knew what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just maybe it's the fact that it's a film and it's really more about film than it is about musical theater. It just feels so hollow and soulless.
Yeah. I think the word I said earlier was uninspired.
Yeah. Right?
Very uninspired. And I don't know why per se, but I remember One thing I do remember is a lot of people talking about how like fun and cool the opening sequence was. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. So I watched it and I was like, I mean, it's kind of neat, I guess. But I don't feel like Another Day of Sun is a particularly riveting song.
It's not a great opening number because so much of the story is the like discord that's happening for whatever the characters' names are, Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling.
Their names are Mia and Sebastian.
You know, I'm not going to remember that. And that's so there's like the musical theater rule of the opening number kind of brings you into the world and sets everything up, but you don't even get them in the opening number.
Nope.
And then you don't get the like any sense of tension or discord. It's just like, wow, how magical it is to live in this bright, colorful city where everyone's happy and the sun is always shining.
Mm-hmm.
And we all wear bright, solid colors and dance on our cars.
Yeah.
And also it's set in Christmas at the beginning.
Winter. Yeah. It says winter and it's like 80 degrees outside in LA, which is like, from what I can understand, pretty standard, but like pretty normal for California. But I wrote some notes about some of the songs in the show. For this one, I wrote, as far as opening sequences go, I think it has a lot of potential, but I was still pretty bored watching this. It's like the only really cool thing about it, in my opinion, is that it's one shot. It's one continuous shot the entire time.
I didn't even notice that.
It is, which is pretty cool. I said, but I'm pretty sure if some random stranger started dancing on my car on the highway, I'd be pretty upset by it. Because like a lot of the times they get out of their car and they're not dancing on their car. They're dancing on the person next to them's car. And I find that irritating. And all of a sudden they open the back of like a delivery van and all of a sudden there's just a band there that's playing music. Like, cool, I guess.
Suspension of disbelief.
Oh, I know.
I think that the concept is, I'm going to use the word fun, not because I had fun, but because the average viewer probably does. That there's like singing and dancing and all of the stuff you would expect to see in a musical, but they could never do a sequence like this on stage.
No.
So to me, it kind of felt like they wanted to replicate that feeling of an opening number with singing and dancing, but it was like, what creative thing could we do that we could never capture on stage? Because even if you wanted to build bumper to bumper traffic on a stage, how many cars are you going to get across? Four, maybe.
If you double it up, maybe eight.
So it wouldn't have the same impact. So I understand the choice, but it doesn't work with the rest of the piece.
It doesn't have anything to do with the rest of the movie other than it's set in LA.
We're in LA.
Yeah.
Traffic here's bad.
Yeah. And again, I feel like it has potential to be something very cool, but I was just not impressed.
Yeah.
But yeah, like then we don't meet Sebastian and Mia until immediately after that, because they don't participate in the opening number. It's like everyone like hops off their cars and gets back in and starts honking their horns again, and then the camera slowly pans down to Ryan Gosling playing the same like few seconds of a jazz track over and over and over again, and then Emma Stone running lines, and then she flips him off because he honked at her. And then that's their little meet cute for the movie. That's how they meet each other for the first time.
Do you know what a meet cute is?
It's like, well, I think so.
Because it doesn't, you keep using that word. I would not describe their meeting as a meet cute.
Well, because it's not positive?
Because there's nothing cute about it.
Sure.
Let's ask the internet. We're old. What is a meet cute? Noun. In a film or television show. An amusing or charming first encounter between two characters that leads to the development of a romantic relationship between them.
I'd say it's pretty amusing.
I guess it's amusing.
So I'm technically not wrong.
I guess you could be right.
For once.
I still don't, but I don't think that's where that moment leads to the development of a romantic relationship. So they keep running into each other.
No, because like they keep running into each other because like that happens then, and then the next time she sees him, she runs into him at a diner or restaurant, or like some kind of fancy restaurant or something that he's playing Christmas music at that he hates, because he's a serious musician and serious musicians don't like shouldn't play the set list or whatever he's so upset about, because he's playing all these very generic Christmas tunes at a restaurant during Christmas time.
Okay, but if it's a fancy restaurant that's fancy enough to have a grand piano and someone playing the piano during dinner hours, could he not do a jazz cover of Jingle Bells?
No, he could, but
why couldn't he just do a cover in the style that he likes? I mean, in like 6 months he's gonna cave in and start playing with a band he doesn't like, so yeah. What's the difference, right? I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah. It's fair. It's fine. This whole movie is boring. Like, it needs something to liven it up a little bit.
It does all feel very 2010s to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it, as particularly in costuming.
Yeah.
Where it was mostly solid, bright colors. That part felt very theater to me, because at least in my program, that's what they trained us to wear to auditions and things.
With stuff like that.
Every girl should have a solid color, like knee length dress,
mm-hmm.
and that you can move in. And that's your audition dress. And it has to be color you look good in. Cause I got weird feedback from people, cause I would wear yellow. And they were like, you're a white girl with blonde hair. You shouldn't wear yellow. Yellow hair, yellow dress doesn't work. And then I was like, well, I'm not going to wear royal blue like every other girl in the room.
Right.
With blonde hair.
Wear dark green.
Or pink. No, dark green wasn't in at that point. Mm. Dark green was for redheads.
Oh, that's fair.
If you were blonde, you had to wear blue. If you were a redhead, you had to wear green. And then if you had brown hair, you had to wear red. And then if you were anything other than pasty pale, you could get away with other fun, bright colors. Like, that was the feedback I got was, Emily, you're not black. You can't wear yellow. You're too pale. If you had darker skin, you could probably pull off yellow. Mm. But I think personally that I can pull off yellow, and fuck you to all those dance teachers who told me not to wear yellow.
Well, I've been speaking of like auditioning. I feel like this, like from the professional actors that I know that I've worked with before, the scene where she's like in the audition room is pretty accurate. As far as like the grind, when she walks out and she's wearing the exact same outfit as all these other moderately tall, skinny redhead women. They all look the same. Very accurate.
My reminder that I could never make it as an actor. I mean, I've probably mentioned this before at some point, but I mean, I did a performance degree, but about halfway through the program, I realized I could not hear no 1,000 times. Like, there's no way that I would want to keep doing it to hear no so much. And the rejection is just a part of the job, which is where I transitioned to stage management and was much happier.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, seeing that, like, there's some point in the movie where she's like, it's been 6 years or something.
Yeah.
It's like, I cannot imagine working like whatever soulless day job to go on any audition I could to like constantly hear no, 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 and like never get anything out of it mm-hmm. for 6 years.
Yeah.
That'd be so soul crushing. I would not. So
yeah.
Yeah.
It's all about the grind. But that's why the people that are, you know, have a lot of success with that are either like they put in the work and they got lucky, or they're Nepo babies. It's one of the two. So
I'm looking at you, Ben Platt. I saw your daddy's a producer on this one too.
I did have a thought about just the singing in this film in general. Why so breathy? Why so quiet?
As like, I've seen discourse about this.
Because like I know that both of these actors can sing and sing well. What's the deal? Is this the fault of the music director, or just is it the director's fault? Like, why are they singing this way?
I think this is more of the evidence that this is not a musical and it's a film that's paying homage to golden age musical film.
Okay.
And where a song was written and then they wrote a plot around it. And so, cause like they're making specific choices throughout that it's not a musical, and the way that the music is written and performed is not like a musical.
Right.
So I think that that's more evidence in that column. But there are moments where I'm like, do they know they're in a musical?
Right.
Like she changes her shoes.
Yeah.
And anytime there's a dance number, she's wearing the dance shoes.
Yeah.
Like, do they know they're in a musical? Do they know they're singing and dancing?
I don't know.
Yeah. I did have a thought while we're on music. I mean, she played Sally Bowles. Like, we know she can sing.
Yeah, I know. I know for sure, yeah.
But to be so breathy, I think the second number might be a more effective opening number than the actual opening number. It kind of has the same tone. The one where all the girls are getting ready and they're going to that party.
Oh, yeah. That song, that song is called Somewhere in the Crowd.
Great. So they're all like singing and dancing and whatever. And then at the very end, you get that moment of her singing, like how she's actually feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that discord that we needed at the beginning to be like, this film is not about how wonderful and great and happy and sunny it is to live in LA.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the struggle of an artist.
Right.
But we don't get that until way, way into the movie.
Right. I mean, like, you see, like, the struggle and the grind up front from both characters. Because, like, the thing, I was the most interested in is at one point when we really delve more into Sebastian, Ryan Gosling's character, is that he walks into his apartment or whatever, and his sister is there, and he's talking to her, and she says, oh, you got duped, basically, into coming out here, and now you're screwed. And he's like, I didn't get duped. She's like, no, you did. And I'm like, can I hear that story? I want to know what happened there. How did you get here? Like, they just mentioned this, like, kind of interesting backstory of why he's in LA. Like, we get why Mia is there. She wants to be an actor. And we hear about why she wants to be an actor from her in the film. Because her aunt was in a touring theater group and helped blossom her love for performing. And she wanted to do it. And that's why she's pursuing a career in acting. But why is Seb there?
Because she needs a dance
partner.
Because
she needs a love interest. She needs someone to fall in love with. That's kind of like, I don't feel like it really tracks. And like, I did not really believe their chemistry at all. I didn't think they had hardly any chemistry.
Yeah, agreed.
It felt very, very forced. And I'm like, why are you two even together at this point? I don't understand that at all.
Because they were hot celebrities with name recognition in 2016.
Oh, I mean, Emma Stone, they're both fairly popular actors still. But I mean, at the time, Emma Stone was blowing up at the time.
Yeah.
Like in a big way. So I get that for the most part.
I guess Ryan Gosling has kind of come back around from the Barbie movie, but.
Right. Yeah.
He kind of faded away for a little
bit
there.
For a little bit, you know. Something else that bothered me about this film is that I feel like the songs aren't long enough. The dance sequence is whatever, but like the songs themselves, I feel like they're not long enough. And that they have a shorter runtime in favor. The songs themselves are not very long in favor of a shorter runtime for the film overall. Because there's so much shit that happens in this movie that, like, amounts to almost nothing. And there's not enough music to keep my interest. And the story in and of itself is not interesting enough for me.
It makes me think of that Billy Joel lyric. If you want to make a hit, then you got to make it fit. Yeah. So they cut it down to 3:05.
I guess so.
Again, it's slop. We know what Pasek and Paul are capable of.
Yeah,
I've
listened to Edges.
This is part. Have you listened to Edges?
I have. I found out every song and listened to it on YouTube.
They're another duo. I've been following their career for a long time, and I knew about Edges when I was in high school, so relatively early on in their career.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Edges and then Dogfight and a lot of stuff that I felt was really great and had a lot of heart. And then we get this slop, where we think the audience isn't smart enough to... babes, what happened?
Because, I mean, after those two, we got this. We got Dear Evan Hansen. Greatest Showman.
Our namesake.
Our namesake. Yeah. It's just like, what happened? And what are they doing now? I don't know what they're writing right now, but
they don't have to do anything now.
Have to, but they do.
They don't have to. Maybe that's what they're like, I can write some pig slop for a big check. Thank you very much.
Okay, Frank. Frank Shepard.
Not Franklin Shepard. Sebastian, whatever his name is. Ryan Gosling.
Sebastian, no last name.
Apparently they have last names. They just don't say it. The irony, I wrote some quotes from the movie that made me roll my eyes. So in the scene where he takes her to the jazz club for the first time and is explaining like why pure jazz is the best thing in the whole world. He says, quote, "They worship everything and value nothing." And I was like, that sounds a little ironic considering this film is in this weird place where it's trying to be reverent of old Hollywood, but it doesn't have any of the skills in music or dance to start. And it doesn't seem like it's done any research. Like, it reminds me of my high school students who don't do any research and just kind of go off of vibes. They're like, this blouse could be perfect for a male character. And you're like, that's a woman's blouse from 1988. And they're like, it is. And you look at them and you're like, well, why do you think the buttons are on the wrong side? And why do you think it has shoulder pads? Like, in what universe do you think that this is a men's shirt? This is clearly a lady's blouse. Or, like, I've had kids who were like, oh, we're doing a play and it's got cheerleaders and it's set in the 1950s. I want them all in miniskirts and crop tops and we were thinking hot pink and highlighter yellow. It's like, that's not 1950s. That's like
2000s minimum.
Yeah, like, like, the color scheme they picked was like towards the early, like maybe late 80s, early 90s. And it was like, that's, you're like in 1990. Like, oh, that's close enough. I'm sorry. Not even.
It's funny.
I understand that we are as far removed right now from 1990 as 1990 was from then, but I don't want to think about that too hard. But, like, it doesn't feel like they did any research.
Yeah.
Or do I just know so little about old Hollywood? To be fair, I don't give a shit about film.
Right.
Not in the way that I care about theater. So, like, am I missing some of these references? I've seen so many people. I read a bunch of articles trying to be like, why do people love this so much? And so many people are like, well, it's old Hollywood and it's a reference to film and it's not meant to be a musical. And people who are upset that there's a stage adaptation maybe in the works. Still, I mean, they've announced it, but there's not really a timeline or any details. So who knows if it's actually happening. But they're like, but that's a terrible idea because La La Land is not a musical. It's a movie that has some songs in it. But it's all reference to like old Hollywood and the movie musicals of that time.
Right. And that's, I mean, it's immediately, watching it today, that's immediately apparent when you watch it because it starts out with the old CinemaScope logo. Besides discounting the fact that CinemaScope doesn't exist anymore, you can't actually film in CinemaScope. That's not a thing that exists. But they did shoot this movie on film. As opposed to digitally, which most films are shot digitally now. So even for 2016, like, yeah, they shot this on actual film with the attempt to try to do all these different things and try to evoke this old golden age Hollywood look. But it doesn't look like that.
No.
It looks like a modern film.
It looks exactly like 2015.
Yeah. It looks exactly like that era. So I don't know what the point of that was even to do that. But like, yeah, but what you're saying and like what they're saying in those articles doesn't make sense to me. I'm like, you're saying like, oh, it's not a musical. I'm like, well, then get off the pot. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Like, either go full in musical or don't make it a music. Don't put music in it at all.
Yeah. Agreed.
City of Stars isn't a good song anyway. So like commit or don't pick one.
Right. And I do want to believe that the discourse that I'm seeing all over the place, and the reason why it was reviewed so well is because there are people who understand what was or what they were going for in this homage to old Hollywood that maybe we just don't get because we're theater people, not film people. But you are a film person more than me,
right?
And I don't know. I want to believe that it's there, but I don't see it and I don't get it.
I mean, we don't hide the fact that I've always been more of a movie person. In fact, most of my musical knowledge stems from film versus yours, which is you're the more of like the live musical theater person in this working relationship that we have on this podcast. And even then, I don't know what the they're talking about. I grew up watching those old Golden Age musicals. This does not look like that. This does not evoke to me those feelings of old Hollywood. This is pretentious slop, is what this is to me. This is like, oh, we're going to make something that's so artsy and like, you know, critically acclaimed and all these different things. And this is like, you do still realize that musicals and comedies are still grouped together in the same category at the Oscars, yes? That's still a thing. That musicals and comedies are in the same category. So no wonder comedies don't win anything, especially when there's a musical like this that's put out there. And so it's just like, it doesn't make sense to me. Sorry, let me backtrack a little bit. As someone who has watched a lot of movies, and I love watching movies, I don't necessarily think I would call myself an expert in this whole process, but I feel like maybe that the process of creating this specific film was expedited by a lot to try to get it out there because they're like, oh, this is Oscar bait. We should produce it as quickly as possible. That's what this feels like to me. It doesn't feel it feels uninspired. It feels boring. It does not have the same quality even compared to like trashy pop musicals that we get today. I would rather watch that than watch this. Or I would watch any classic Golden Age musical film over this.
South Pacific?
I would watch South Pacific over this. And I hate South Pacific. I can't stand South Pacific. And I would rather watch that than watch this.
I'm putting this thought together now, so maybe it doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
I wonder how much of this feeling of it being like hollow and soulless and like slop is the fact that it was made in 2015, right? Like all the filming was done in 2015 and then released 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was made in a time before the political climate became what it is.
Maybe.
Right? Like this is before Trump was elected the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember personally feeling like there was something changed in the world at that moment. Like the early, like the 2010 to 2015, like we had that recession, which kind of sucked that happened when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming out of that, like when I was in college, it just felt like everything was right in the world. And I don't feel like that was just a me experience. I feel like globally things were just, it seemed like everyone got along a little better and like there was less I don't know if I'm explaining myself well, but like something this shiny and pretty and happy could not exist in 2025. You know, they say like the best art comes out of hard times.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like we would never make something like this.
The royal we
would never make art like this right now.
I don't think that you're wrong.
Like 2015 was the end of the like shiny happy.
Right.
And then the political discourse got worse, and then like COVID, and now if only I could go back 10 years and be like, hey, 2015, Emily, guess what's gonna happen?
Yeah.
You'll never believe it.
I feel like it's something I struggle with, like kind of going on a tangent a little bit. Something I struggle a lot with really any films or TV shows today is that people make things so political, even if there's no inherent political messaging in anything. And it's incredibly frustrating to just try to enjoy something, trying to enjoy art for the like art that is made by professionals. I feel like now is just harder than it used to be, enjoying art for art's sake versus like, oh, no, everything is political, even if there is no inherent political intention behind what's being created. And I feel like it's saying. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think everything is political now, in the sense that like any topic about anything can be politicized.
Right.
And the art that is being made about like any particular topic could become a political point for some reason, even right. if that wasn't the intention. But like, if we're making art to point out something, like a flaw in society or whatever, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like this is doing that.
It's not.
I feel.
What's the message of this movie, if there is a message at all?
It's hard to make it as an artist.
Full stop. I mean, we knew that already.
It's hard to achieve your dreams. But I think part of the hollowness is that it's like they want the audience to feel something. Mm-hmm. And so, like, well, let's make it sad because they don't end up together. Spoilers. Isn't that sad? Mm. Don't you wish in that last flashback moment that they had ended up together? Look at the life they could have had together if they had just made a couple of different choices along the way. Mm-hmm. But also the implication there is that if you choose your partner, you either have to choose your art or your partner. You can't have both.
Right. That is.
Did you catch that one?
I did catch that too, yeah.
You couldn't possibly have a career in an arts related field and also have a relationship. That's impossible.
Yeah, well, they're more successful apart than they are together.
Right.
They both got to live their dreams, except their dream of being together. Gag me.
But isn't that sad? Like, oh, but how arty and thoughtful, because it doesn't have a happy ending in a straightforward musical way. But I think that's why it feels so hollow and soulless. It's like, I mean, I remember, did you ever do this when you were a kid? You would like write a story and be like, I'm going to make this a sad ending just because I know I can manipulate my stupid audience.
Yep.
I used to do that.
Yep, I did too.
Like, I had a bunch of friends, I think when I was a freshman in high school, we're all going to write a novel, and we would write more of it, and then we would read each other's work, and we would all purposely be like, it's not going to have a happy ending. Hey. Won't that be devastating? Just to make people feel sad. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. I did that stuff, and like, yeah, it feels, for lack of a better term, very high school to do that. I still have in my possession an award-winning graphic novel that I wrote in high school that has a very sad twist at the end.
Oh, see, I have an award-winning short story that has a funny twist at the end, and I was really proud that I didn't have to pull out the stops.
Oh, no, mine was intentionally sad.
But the one I wrote didn't win any awards. But yes, I did that on purpose. I was like, and here's my plan for how this will end. And everyone's like, no, you can't kill this character at the end. I'm like, but I will, because it will make the audience sad.
Right.
And I can control your emotions. And doesn't that make me seem so smart and artistic to not give them a classic happy ending, even though it's a musical? I was singing and dancing at the beginning, but nobody got a happy ending. But they did get a happy ending, but oh no, wistful.
Yeah.
I can't, teary like, eyes.
It just reminds me a little bit of like, I cannot tell you how emo I wanted to be in high school, Emily. I just can't tell you.
I believe so emo. Without hearing about it.
You believe it without hearing about
it? Yeah. Based on what I know about you. You seem like the kind of kid who, if you could have gotten away with it, you would have been like black eyeliner and like swoop over the face on the daily.
100%. 100%. Jeez. Well, I mean, I'm sitting here and I'm reading a little bit about the film on Wikipedia, which apparently is some type of encyclopedia all about La La Land. And in here, there's a couple of like fun facts, like just to, I mean, well, I'll say fun in quotations. They're facts about this film. That from the beginning, the director, Damien Chazelle, wanted the musical numbers in the film to be performed in a single take, like they would used to do with like Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. But I think part of the problem there is that Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone are not Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers.
Yeah, even like the most iconic still from the film is them dancing together, and they're like, they're sliding and they've got their arms up at the diagonal, they're mirroring each other, and their hands aren't the same.
Yeah.
Like her hand, her arm is all the way straight and his wrist is flexed. And it's, excuse me, that is the easiest fix.
Yeah.
That is such an easy fix. And how sloppy are we that we didn't fix that thing? Or did we intentionally not fix that thing? And if so, why? Because Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers would never.
They'd never.
So is this an homage to old Hollywood? Or is this pig slop that you made one summer with your friends?
Yeah.
Damien, answer for your sins.
You know, it's funny because you mentioned that particular still. I'm like, that's on the fucking poster.
Right, and his hand is like this.
His hand is like this. His hand is
straighten your wrist, Ryan Gosling.
It's like he's walking like an Egyptian, but in a bad way.
Yes, and but like even someone who's not trained as a I don't classify myself as a dancer. I took some dance classes. I have a musical theater degree, but like just if you are at the point where you are choreographing a blockbuster film, right? This lady has been working in the industry for a very long time, and you couldn't fix that one moment because we're so worried about doing it in one take. Do it again.
Woof. It's like they're saying, like, I was reading about some of it as well. It's what's funny. Well, I'll say again, funny in quotations to me, is that it said it took them, they filmed that one dance scene, which that's the song A Lovely Night. They filmed that scene for 2 days. 2 days, just that scene.
Were his wrists too tired? He couldn't hold it up anymore?
I don't know. And like they kind of tap dance, but also don't.
Well, yeah. She changes her shoes. She's like, oh, my heels are so uncomfortable. And then she puts on different heels and then does a dance.
Yeah. Yeah.
I loved all of the moments where it went to that silhouette where the real dancers were dancing. And it's like you can tell it's not them because they have technique now. Mm-hmm. And it would have been so easy to teach just a little bit of technique stuff.
Yeah.
That's the thing. If they were in, I'm sure they were in rehearsals for a significant amount of time. And they, I know that it's possible to teach people quickly. I don't watch Dancing with the Stars, but I know they learn those dances very quickly.
Yeah.
And there's technique there.
Yeah.
Like what the f*** happened here? Could they, and why didn't they at least Photoshop the wrist to be straight or hers to be flexed for the poster, right?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Is this why dance, like the high school kids we have in dance today, like are sloppy? Is that reason? Or is it just lack of rhythm? I'm not sure.
They don't have any experience. So, that's and true. No one's pointing out that stuff to them. And they know, the kids who've been around, at least like my kids who've been around in musicals for a while, will ask questions like that. Like, where are our hands supposed to be here?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, aha, see, you did three musicals with me. Now you're doing the fourth one. And now you know to ask that question. And I don't know shit about dance comparatively.
Right.
So if I can teach you to just ask that question of like, oh, are our hands straight or are our wrists bent? Do you want our fingers spread or do you want our fingers tight to get, like, how do you want, just little questions about little details.
Is it right arm first or left arm first?
Not even that, but like I do have kids who ask about placement of things, like, oh, are our knees slightly bent? I saw that when you did it this time, you changed this. Do you want us to change that too?
Yeah.
Oh, and like little things that I didn't even point, like, this tangent now, when we do auditions, I record a video of the dance ahead of time because we have lots of kids who don't have dance experience and I don't really care how fast they can learn the dance. I care if they will put in the effort to learn the dance outside of rehearsal.
Right.
So I taught like a little 30-second cut of a dance and I did some things in the video that I didn't realize I did that all of the kids started doing because they were watching it that closely and then they were showing each other, no, correct this and then we're all going to do it the same way. And it was fine. I didn't care. But like, didn't realize that that's what I was doing. I didn't explicitly ask for that.
Right.
But if my high school kids who have never taken a dance class and don't know anything can do it, Ryan Gosling can do it too. Straighten your wrist. Oh, like that's where I mean, like it's sloppy. It's just to let her sing in that mousy, airy little voice for so long. I mean, she does finally at the very, very end when she's singing for that, like,
yeah, the
callback.
The audition song, yeah.
That last verse through, she finally, like, gets some vocal fold closure and sings with some tone, but...
That's the part where I'm like, there it is. There's Emma Stone.
Right, I was watching
singer.
It going, wait a second, she played Sally Bowles, right? I'm not misremembering that. She was in Cabaret. That's not an easy role to sing, surely. And then she started singing. It was like, okay, so we've asked her to sing in this terrible way.
Yeah.
For a long time. If it was just the very, very beginning and then we eased into it, sure, but we didn't... Like, why are we making these choices? What was going on?
Well, I'll ask you this just because we're kind of going all over the place on this, but we've talked a lot of different sequences of different things, but out of curiosity, do you have a favorite song on the show?
No.
The
end credits, because it meant I got to leave.
I would say that there's not really no songs really stood out for me. I will say the one song that I actually was like, okay, yeah, I get it, was the one song that John Legend sings, which is called Start a Fire. And then, fun fact, Paskin Paul didn't write that song. John Legend did. And I was like, oh, okay. You get it, John Legend.
I also liked the pool party scene where they played the 80s pop songs. Does that count?
That was pretty funny. I did enjoy that part as well.
An honorable mention to the song in when he takes her to the jazz club for the first time and the band is playing. Yeah. And he's getting mad at her because she says that jazz is the kind of music that people talk over.
Yeah.
While he's talking over that music to explain why it's so important.
Right. That's pretty funny. Oh, I will also say while I mentioned John Legend, I feel like it's important that every good antagonist have a sinister name, like Keith, you know, that's very important.
I'm going to be honest, I don't know a single good Keith, so that worked for me.
Yeah,
I did think when he popped up on the screen, I was like, why is John Legend here? And then when they said his name was Keith, I'm like, ah.
That's why.
The villain, Keith.
Yeah.
Had no memory of that from the first time I watched it.
I remember John Legend being in it, and I remember the band stuff kind of from like the first time I had watched it. But I was like, oh, okay. I remembered the end dance sequence. I did not remember the planetarium scene.
Where they're like flying and dancing in the stars.
So here's some things, some notes I made about that scene in particular. There's no vocals at all. It's just a dance sequence, right? And I said, I'm all for a cool dance sequence with no vocalizing. That's fine. But a few hangups for me on this is, one, the fantasy elements are out of literally nowhere. Like, there's been nothing at this point in time that indicates anything other than this being a grounded film and all of a sudden they're flying for no reason.
I mean, except for the fact they burst into song and dance.
But like, you go into a musical, that's what you expect.
But it's not a musical.
It's a musical, and they can suck a dick. It's a musical. Also, the fact that it's still fucking boring. Like, the fact that they have these people lift in the air and start dancing in literal stars, and it's still boring.
Because they're not dancers. Did we spend no amount of rehearsal time teaching them to dance?
I guess it's supposed to be a visual representation of these characters falling in love, but I really wasn't that clear, and I have no emotional connection at all during that entire scene.
Soulless slop.
We just keep saying the same thing over and over again. We probably could have
Damien Slop Chazelle.
I don't know if he's done. I don't know what he's done after this. That's part of the problem as well.
Who gives a f? He won Best Director.
He won Best Director.
I mean,
32. And
what else
done.
Do you need?
The movie that he did before this one?
What?
Whiplash.
Oh, I do remember reading that. That was way better.
Yeah, Whiplash is way better than this. But again, weird jazz obsession. But you know, it's whatever.
Maybe maybe he thinks that musicals are just empty and vapid and hollow slop, and that's why he's created a film that's empty, vapid, hollow slop. Damien, if you're listening, at Greatest Show Pod, let me know, girl, because I think, yeah, I think this is disgusting shit, and the fact that I watched it twice in my life, woof.
Well, out of curiosity, I've briefly pulled up his Wikipedia page, and it says that his next film in July 2019 was called Babylon. And I don't know if you heard of this film at all, but it was a massive failure.
No, I didn't hear about it. Yeah. There was a tiny part of my brain that was hoping maybe you were going to say Journey to Bethlehem.
Oh, no. It was, but here's the thing. It's a film called Babylon set in 1920s Hollywood. And it was, had a budget of $80 million and it made $4.5 million. So he came in, his career took off with Whiplash, and then he did La La Land. He got all this critical acclaim, and then he fell on his face for the rest of his life.
Don't you love it when a pretentious asshole gets what's coming to them? I say that like he's a pretentious asshole. I don't know that for sure, but based on this, kind of seems like it.
Yeah.
I feel like only someone pretentious could write such a pretentious asshole character and not view him as dislikable, unlikable.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's like, I feel like maybe this was such a critical success because it was different than what we were getting at the time.
Yeah, maybe.
But, I mean, to be fair, I have seen a pretty good number of Oscar-winning films, and I haven't liked any of them. So, maybe I just like slop, but this is not the kind of slop I like.
Different slop. I'm all out of talking points, for the record.
Yeah, I kind of am as well. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's soulless, lacks substance, and has, like, I have no desire to ever watch this movie ever again.
Yeah, same.
Okay, Emily, give me your rating. What do you think?
3 out of 10.
3 out of 10.
Truthfully, the first time I watched it, I was very angry about it because I was like, this sucks. Why are people talking? I think I watched it after it won the Oscar even.
Mm-hmm.
Or after the Oscars. It didn't win the big Oscar. But, yeah, just people being like, oh, it's so good. You'll love it so much. You're a musical theater major. You love musicals. You'll love it. And it's just felt so empty. It's like, is this what you think I do? Because if so, I'm a little offended. The art that I like is not this.
Yeah.
This time watching it, I wasn't quite as angry, but I do still feel like, you know, that's 2 hours and 8 minutes of my life just gone again. Yeah. Could have been doing something else, like scrubbing toilets or scraping roadkill off the side of the road.
I literally cleaned up my kid's room while watching this movie. And that was the most accomplished thing I've done today.
We were decorating for Christmas. We put our Christmas tree up and we were putting Christmas ornaments up. Like Guy started doing it. He got all the lights and stuff on it, and then the movie ended, and then I felt better because I wasn't thinking about the movie so much anymore.
So I think for my rating, I am going to agree. Because it's boring, uninspired. It's soulless. There's nothing here. It's like, this is a nothing film for nothing people, is how it feels to me. Like, if this film is someone's introduction to musicals, I am sorry. You need to get a better life. Like, go watch Wicked. I'm glad I left. I rewatched La La Land this morning, and I am so, so glad I got the palate cleanser of watching Merrily after this, because good God, like, it's so boring, and it's so pretentious, and it is so self-important, and what it's trying to accomplish, which at the end of the day, nothing. It says, oh, art is like the, what's the lesson here? Art is hard. Yeah, we knew that. Anything else? Oh, sometimes your life doesn't go the way you planned it. Yep, knew that too. What else you got? Nothing? Cool. Thanks. Thanks, Damien. So helpful.
So helpful. I want to say that if La La Land was your entry point into musical theater, and now you're here, welcome. I'm glad you're here, and I would like to show you some better musicals. So if film is where you need to access musicals from, go check out some bonus episodes that we just recorded. Sure. Because there are some good examples of musicals on film that exist in the world. But know that the musical theater world is better than this. And if you, in particular, even if you like Pasek and Paul, they have better work than this. And if you like something that's filmic and you like something that's based on older movies, like they have that too, right? They have, I love Edges and Dogfight. Those are my favorites from them. But like James and the Giant Peach is great. A Christmas Story I even liked, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. Like they have a lot of work that I really like that is real, quote unquote, I'll say real musical theater, where this really isn't what the world is like, and it is so much more.
Look, I understand this movie is trying to pay homage to these golden age musicals. Go watch literally any of those instead of this. They're all better. Every single one. Singing in the Rain. Like, Yankee Doodle is another one. Annie, Get Your Gun. Like, they're all, like, literally any golden age musical is better than this piece of this pretentious jazz filled, like, this movie is as pretentious as jazz players are ad nauseum. There you go. Fair. Maybe that's the point. Jazz players suck. And the thing is, personally, I do like jazz music. I used to not, but then when I was getting my associate degree, I had to, the only elective class they offered was the history of jazz. And I was like, great, I'm going to hate it. And I wound up taking it, and I wound up developing an appreciation for jazz. I do like it. I think I'm kind of lean with you more, and like, I do like the big band stuff a little bit more. But as far as like, if I'm not opposed to going to a jazz club, that's fine. But like, I don't know what to do with this other than just never watch it again.
Yeah, I'm going to continue to shout it from the rooftops. And when my students say, oh, we're doing a musical theater unit, can I sing something from La La Land? I will say, no.
No, pick a real musical.
No, you may not. It must be from a stage show. But if you like this, here are some suggestions for other things you might like.
Can I think City of Stars?
And hopefully, no, you may not. Or like, we're doing a monologue unit. It has to be from a play. How about from La La Land? That's a musical. No, that's a movie. It needs to be from a stage show. And so, no, you may not do Emma Stone's monologue. But if you like that, here are some other things you might like. Like, if this is your gateway musical, then I'm happy for you. Well, that's curtains for us here at The Greatest Show Pod. Thanks so much for listening. If you have thoughts about La La Land that you would like to share with us, please hit us up on social media at Greatest Show Pod, or you can send us an email at thegreatestshowpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear your feedback, especially if you do like La La Land and you want to defend it. Send me a message.
Yeah, bring
Let's
it
talk
on.
About it.
That's how I feel right now. Bring it on.
If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a rating and review or tell your friends about us. We really appreciate
100%.
It.
Thank you. And thank you for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening. We will see you next time. Well, we won't see you, but you will have us in your ear holes next time.
Forever in your ear holes. That's going to be on like
Forever in your holes. That's my first album, I call it.
I was going to say that's a good like t-shirt thing to have. Forever in your ear holes. The Greatest Show Pod.
Forever in your ear holes is... Oh, I like that actually. I was going to say it could be my band... The Pretentious Jazz Holes. Lead single, Forever in Your Ear Holes.
Actually, that sounds like it slaps.
Pretentious jazz holes.
It's the Greatest Show, Man. It's produced by Brantley Wheeler and Emily Chavone. Our theme song is by the incredibly talented Patrick Duffy. Links to all his social media in the episode description. You can find us on all the socials at Greatest Show Pod. Tweet at Emily and tell her why her opinions are bad and she should feel bad. If you have any suggestions for a musical we should cover in the future, send us an email at thegreatestshowpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.
I do kind of want to go back. I didn't have time to do it today, but I want to go back and watch that Jenny Nicholson video on La La Land.
Oh, I didn't know she had one.
Oh, yeah. It's from right around this time. It was one of the first videos of hers that I watched. And I watched it before I saw the movie. And I thought, wow, this is kind of harsh. And then I agreed with everything that she said.
I am going to look for that now. Shout out to Jenny Nicholson.
I'm going
to
do that later. Jenny Nicholson,
doing the Lord's work out there. I need to...
Of shitting on crappy movies in video essay
pretentious
format.
Film. Pretentious films.